5. Even with the best winds, a trip all the way from Thalina to Amia would take weeks. Fortunately, Rissen had plenty to occupy her. There were future trade deals to begin setting up, and communications from paralyzed people around the world to answer. Rissen sincerely hoped she'd someday get to meet these friendly letter writers in person. The ship sheltered in coves for high storms and everstorms, which let Rissen go briefly ashore to send letters via spanreed. Although the Wandersail had been built to survive storms, sailing during one was still something they would do only in an emergency. As the days passed, Rissen tried to learn about the people on her ship, though her crew was difficult to engage. She now recognized their resentment as a form of empathy for their captain, who they felt should have been given the ship. But even without that, talking to them would have been awkward. She was their Rebsk, more unapproachable than an officer. When she tried to engage them in conversation, they'd respond in non-committal ways or grow quiet. The Lopan did not have that particular problem. He was fascinating. She'd imagined Radiants and seen them from afar, but hadn't met many. The one she had the most experience with was the solemn, quiet man she'd visited to see if her legs could be healed. He'd explained to her that he couldn't heal wounds that were more than a few months old. He'd been aloof, despite his obvious compassion for her situation. She'd watched windrunners soar overhead and imagined them as mighty warriors, battlefield legends who inspired with bold actions, heroic deeds, larger than life, as if cut from stone, sculpted like the statues in the temples of the heralds in Thalen City.
"Now," the Lopan said to her, prancing around her chair in circles, on hands and knees. "You gotta have two hands to properly crawl. I came up with my own version, sure, when I had one hand, but it was more of a shuffle. See?"
He moved to crawling with one hand, the other behind his back. "That looks very much like crawling to me, Radiant the Lopan," Rissen said.
"It's different, though," the Lopan said. "I tell you, I missed being able to do it."
"You missed crawling?"
"Sure. I'd lay in bed and think, 'Lopan, you used to be a majestic crawler. These louts don't know how good they have it, being able to crawl whenever they want.'
I can't imagine that if I were restored to the use of my legs, I would wish to do something so silly as crawl around."
He flopped down onto the deck beside her chair, rolling over and looking up.
"Yeah, maybe. But it's nice to make people laugh at you for something you do, and not something you can't control, you know?"
Yes, I think I do."
The ship surged across a wave. The seas were moderately rough today, though no storm was predicted. Wavespren danced atop the tips of whited caps across a field of shimmering blue. Rissen sat at her customary station on the quarterdeck, far aft, tucked in the corner beneath her sunshade and securely strapped in. Nickley had been true to his word, and so she now had a nightstand to her right, bolted to the deck, with a latching cabinet where she could store books and writing materials. The captain gave the seat a look every time she passed, and Rissen could feel what she was thinking. What an impractical location. Sitting here, Rissen was exposed to the wind and occasional sprays of seawater. Why not stay in her cabin, as Durlwan had suggested? People said things like that with a straight face, while being hit by wind and sprays of seawater themselves, never seeing the hypocrisy. Rissen wanted to be up where she could be seen, where she could watch the horizon. She wanted to listen to the sounds of the sea, the sprays, the crashes, and the calls of the sailors as they worked. Nearby,
Queen Navani's scribe, a slender ardent named Rushu, knelt beside a box where she tinkered with some fabrials. Though they were a few weeks into the trip, Rissen hadn't yet received her promised demonstration of those, though she hoped it would happen today.
"So?"
the Lopan said in a lethe, still lying on his back near her seat and staring up at the clouds.
"Know any good no-legged Phylan jokes?"
"None worth sharing."
"One-legged jokes seem easier," the Lopan said. "What do you call a one-legged Phylan? Lean? Nah, that's not close enough to a real name.
Lopan," Rushu said as she worked, "you should not be tormenting Brightness Rissen with your prattling."
The Lopan nodded absently, then his eyes opened wide.
"Oh, why was the no-legged Phylan unhappy? Because she'd been defeated. Ha! Hey! Huyo, listen!"
Rissen couldn't help smiling as he proceeded to tell the joke in Herdazian to his cousin, a squat, bald man with a wide, round face and beefy arms. She thought, from her limited knowledge of the Herdazian language, he then had to explain the pun, completely spoiling the joke. Yet the way the Lopan spoke, with such enthusiasm, such insistence on being seen and not ignored, made her feel relaxed, even encouraged. His cousin, in contrast, was a quiet man. Curiously, Radiant Huyo had spent most of the trip so far lending a hand with various shipboard duties. He could tie knots and work the rigging like he'd been born on a ship. Today, he simply nodded pleasantly at the Lopan's joke and continued working on the rope he'd been untangling. That was a lowly duty, usually assigned to a sailor who had slept in late, but here a knight Radiant was doing it without being asked.
"Lopan," Rushu repeated. "That was not appropriate."
"It's all right, ardent Rushu," Rissen said.
"You shouldn't have to listen to things like that, Brightness," the ardent said. "It's unseemly to make mockery of your ailment."
"The thing that's unseemly," the Lopan said, "is how people treat us sometimes. Rissen, they ever ask about how it happened, and then get angry if you don't want to discuss it?"
"All the time," she said. "Ash's eyes, they keep poking at me like I'm a riddle that exists only to entertain them. Others get quiet around me and awkward."
"Yeah, I used to hate how folks would pretend I was going to break at any moment."
"Like some kind of fragile vase that will tip off the shelf if upset. They can't see me. They see the chair."
"That's so uncomfortable," the Lopan continued. "They don't want to look and don't want to bring it up, but it hovers about the conversation like a storming spren."
"But if you have the right joke."
"Brightness Rissen shouldn't have to crack jokes at her own expense in order to make other people comfortable with their personal insecurities."
"Yep, true," the Lopan said. "She shouldn't have to."
Rushu nodded curtly, as if she'd won the argument. But Rissen understood the tone in the Lopan's voice. She shouldn't have to do such things. But life was unfair, and so you controlled the situation as best you could. Strange to find such wisdom in a man she'd initially dismissed as silly. She inspected him lying on the deck, and he raised a fist in a gesture of solidarity.
"Radiant the Lopan," Rissen said. What do you call a Phylan who can't walk?"
"Not sure, Gansha."
"Names. From afar."
He grinned widely.
"Of course," Rissen added. "I'd never stand for that sort of thing."
The Lopan about died from laughing. He called to his cousin again, translating the jokes. This time, Huyo chuckled. Rushu huffed, but moved closer to Rissen
carrying a box of gemstones and wire cages.
All right, Brightness. I am sufficiently prepared to provide a demonstration.
Knowing you, Stella, Lopin said to her. You were prepared yesterday and the day before and the day before that. What happened? Get distracted by wondering how fish breathe?
We know how fish breathe, Lopin, Rushu said, setting out her equipment on Rissen's table.
Then she blushed.
I got distracted by reading a new report on a curious interaction between flame spren and logic spren. The most interesting things are being discovered. Apologies, Brightness. I'm prone to letting the days slip past me now and then. But here, I'm ready.
She handed Rissen a silvery hoop with half of a glowing ruby attached to the top.
Hold that out in front of you, your arm straight. Excellent. Just like that.
Rushu stepped back and held up a similar hoop.
Now, twist the gemstone's housing to conjoin them.
Rissen did so. Rushu let go of her hoop, and it remained hanging in the air. The hoop in Rissen's hand felt slightly lighter than it had before conjoining them.
You're likely aware of this application of rubies, Rushu said, stepping beneath the sunshade. It's how we make span reeds. Two halves of a ruby, containing two halves of the same spren, can be made to move in tandem with one another. Many people, however, aren't aware that gemstones can be paired in such a way as to make their movements opposite one another. Traditionally, we've used amethysts for this, but rubies work as well, and we have an excess of those from the ranches at the Shattered Plains. Now, move your hoop around, but carefully, as the paired one might move differently from the way you anticipate.
Indeed, as Rissen moved her hoop down, the floating one rose upward. If she moved her hoop left, the other moved right. It seemed to be a perfect transposition.
We've known about this for a while, Rushu explained. Our current creations are more in application than innovation. We've spent months developing housings for fabrials that won't unduly stress the gemstones and have begun creating lattices that allow a large number of them to work in conjunction. That is how we create flying platforms. Each has a lattice of rubies conjoined to another lattice that is set up in a convenient location, such as alongside a plateau with a steep cliff. We can lower the cliffside lattice and, in so doing, raise the lattice on a distant battlefield and provide a platform for scouts or archers.
But span reeds don't work on ships that are sailing, Rissen said, moving her hoop around and watching its other half respond.
Why does this? Well, the problem with span reeds is that a ship is always rocking and moving, Rushu explained. If you're holding one in your lap and writing, you might feel that you're being steady, but since the entire ship is moving so much, the reed on the other side will be wobbling around and surging up and down. We found that there is simply too much motion to properly use span reeds this way. However, right now, both of these hoops are on the same ship. They rock together, move together.
But when the ship goes down, Rissen said, pointing at the other ring,
shouldn't it go up? Yes, theoretically, Rushu said. But it doesn't. Only your movements affect it. We believe this has to do with the frame of reference, as applied to the person moving the hoop. Spren, it should be noted, have a curious relationship to our perception of them and their motions. You see both of these hoops in the same frame of reference, so they act together. It's why the motion and curve of the planet don't influence span reeds. It's proven impossible for someone on a ship with a span reed to see themselves in the same frame of reference as the person receiving the communication. Perhaps there is a way to train ourselves, but no one has discovered it. Indeed, even the size of the ship can influence these things. If you tried this experiment on a rowboat, for example,
the results could be different. That didn't make much sense to Rissen. Still, it was evident that the ship's motion didn't affect the two hoops. They both moved with it, rather than one ring being left behind, or being sent hundreds of feet in the opposite direction as the ship sailed forward. Fabrials. Herr Babsk had always been fascinated with them. Perhaps that was something Rissen should have picked up from him.
So, how's this going to help? The Lopan said, sitting up beside her seat. Oh, we're going to stick those to her legs and then have this other person walk around and she'll be able to look like she's walking.
Rushu said. We were rather thinking of making her seat hover in the air.
Oh, the Lopan said. That makes way more sense.
He seemed disappointed, nonetheless. Rissen shook her head. I see why Brightness Novani was hesitant to make any promises. If we were to make a chair hover for me, it wouldn't do me much good, would it? The chair would have to be attached to a lattice of gemstones, and then if I wanted to move forward, someone would have to move that lattice. So I'd still need porters and carriers. Unfortunately, yes, Brightness, Rushu said.
Rissen tried not to let disappointment show on her face. The world was becoming a place of wonders. Men and women soared in the air, and ships were being built with lightning rods right in the masts. At times, everything felt like it was progressing at an insane pace. Yet none of it seemed able to help her. The healing was amazing, as long as your wound was fresh. The fabrials were incredible, as long as you had manpower to operate them. She had let herself begin to dream of a hovering seat she could direct under her own power, without needing to be hauled around like a roll of sailcloth.
Be careful, she thought. Don't sink back into that lethargy of inaction. Life was better for her now. She'd learned to change her surroundings to suit her needs. She dressed herself every morning with ease, using the hooks. Plus, she had her own ship. Well, she owned a ship. At any rate, this was better than sitting in a dull room doing accounts.
Thank you for the demonstration, Ardent Rushu, she said. The technology is fascinating, even if the application doesn't seem suited to my needs. Well, Brightness Novani did assign me a list of tests to run, Rushu said. She gave some thought to how this might help you in your specific situation. Perhaps you'd like to get a view as grand as that of the eel's nest? We could send you soaring up high. Or perhaps we can fashion a little lift to raise and lower you to and from the quarterdeck. That can be managed with some counterweights and a crank that can be wound periodically by one of the sailors.
That seemed a pale offering compared to her dreams, but Rissen forced out a smile.
Thank you. I should like to be available for those experiments.
Rushu deactivated the hoops and returned them to her box, along with some other machinery, including several silvery sheets of metal of varying thickness.
Aluminum, she explained as Rissen peered inside. It blocks spanreed communication, something we only recently discovered. Navani wants me to experiment with how thick the aluminum needs to be to function, and then see if it affects, in any way, how paired rubies react or don't react to natural ship movements. I even have some foil to... Oh, I'm getting too technical, aren't I? Sorry, I have a tendency to do that.
She looked to Rissen, then to the Lopan, who was sitting and rubbing his chin.
Wait, he said. Back up. I need an explanation.
Lopan, Rushu said. I hardly think I can...
How do fish breathe? He said.
Rissen smiled at the Ardent's exasperation. Rushu thought it was a joke, but the Lopan seemed genuinely interested
as he pestered her for an explanation. A sudden motion distracted Rissen, as Castled rushed up to the quarterdeck and whispered something to the captain, who had been chatting with the current helmsman. Rissen focused on them, on Castled's worried face, and on the captain's immediate frown. Would they remember to inform her, whatever it was? The captain gave an order, then started down the steps. Halfway down, she paused to glance at Rissen, and noticed that Rissen was looking directly at her. So the captain, seeming annoyed, walked back up and trotted over. What? Rissen asked, anxious. What is wrong?
Dark soul casting, the captain said, and bad omens. You should probably see it in person, Rebsk.